So we got to do this as part of the thing, right?
Yeah, right,
so,
right.
All right, so do you want me to do the intro?
Go ahead.
All right, well, welcome everybody. Today is the TechMeme Ride Home Experience. This is a very strange and experimental process. We are actually live in Brooklyn. We've got Alex, Brian, me, Chris Messina, and we are having beers together.
Did I not? Do you want one?
No, I'm going to just drink this. Yes.
Right. I like to. Well, here, cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
Right, he was going to exercise or something after this, too. Well,
that's good.
I have a busy afternoon.
What is today? Today is October 20th, and we are coming to you live
in person. Make it clear that we're talking to Alex Kantrowitz, is now my neighbor after, a month or so?
That's right, yeah. Been in Brooklyn since August, and this is my second tour of duty here in the great borough of Brooklyn, with a six-plus-year stint in San Francisco in between, and sweet to be back, what can I say?
But we knew Chris was going to be in town. And so I was like, if we can make it happen, it would be fun just to do it in person. Then Alex and I met up in the park on Monday, and I was like, hey, we're going to do this anyway. And it turns out, coincidentally, that you're the ideal person based on the news this week to talk to about something. So this is all working out beautifully.
Big tech going on at all.
Right, no. Yeah. And we have, if you hear birds and whatnot in the background, it's because our windows are open. We're sitting around my kitchen table.
It's because nature is healing.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's also, you know, a little warm in here, so we need the windows open anyway. But all right, so let's do first things first. Let's get this out of the way. The Apple event, and we just had a perfect encapsulation of why pros need things like SD card slots when you're trying to test your audio and you need to pull out the card to, like, see how the gain does and all that stuff and what the waveforms look like. And okay, so as we said on the show, bottom line is we got the MacBook Pros that we have been waiting forever for.
Finally.
And as I said on the show, all they did was basically undo all of the garbage that they did to us for 5 years. So I don't know if we should be thankful for that. Actually, I don't know, Alex, are you a Mac Apple ecosystem person?
Yeah, I'm all in on the Mac.
Okay.
MacBook, iPhone, AirPods.
Have you upgraded? Are you upgrading?
I'm going to hold off. You know, I do think that even though I use MacBook professionally and have a Mac desktop, I am going to make a bold statement and say that I feel like my use case really represents what most people's uses of Apple, which is that, you know, the last set of models were pretty good. And I view this as a once every 5 year investment. And I was part of the masses of people who upgraded during COVID because we realized we were going to be working at home.
Yep.
And we needed the best models that we could possibly get as soon as we could possibly get it. And so a lot of people are saying, like, folks like me, you know, who've just bought these computers within the past couple of years, are going to upgrade right away to these very expensive new models.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that.
But I really don't think that's the case. And trust me, I mean, I do podcasting on my own with Big Technology Podcast. I need the, you know, high download, high upload speeds, especially if I'm going to go on TV. And so these machines need to be quick and powerful for me. But even then, I'm going to be able to subsist without a problem on the previous version of the MacBook for at least another 2, maybe 3 years. So what you're seeing is, you'll have a handful of early adopters and enthusiasts. They're going to go in and upgrade right away. But it won't be this big spike for Apple, and you'll end up seeing this continual burn, you know, because my upgrade's going to come in 2024, hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, 2023 maybe. But I'm still looking forward to getting that machine. It's just not a pressing need like those Apple events make you think it is.
Did you, Chris, pull the trigger already?
I'm about to. Yeah. I feel like I learned from you that you can actually get it's the Max or the Pro, whatever the top line thing is, language again, in the 14-inch?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
And so the fact that I almost pulled the trigger on 14-inch without getting the top of the line, and now you've said that it's possible, I think I will do that. I think, to your point, Alex, I do think this is like a 4 or 5 year kind of investment. And so amortized over that time, to me, it makes sense to sort of, you know, go for like top of the line, and then it'll maintain, I hope, its resale value for some period of time. I'm still, you know, I'm rocking like a 2018 MacBook Pro. It's fine. But, you know, as I've shared before, I've got like afterburner skids on the back of mine because of the level of fan usage. So, you know, the other thing that I've been noticing and thinking about is the degree to which, and I don't really know how to make sense of this, although I'm hoping that the combination of, you know, Mac OS Monterey and the M1 CPUs will actually be so much more efficient in the way in which I use basically web-based applications. What I find now is that I essentially have a number of Electron apps that are masquerading as native apps, but each of them is essentially running a separate web browser instance with tabs. And that's highly inefficient for the, you know, generation of Intel chips that seem to be in there. And so the way in which Monterey and M1 take more of the mobile, I think, theory of computing and know how to turn things on and spin up and spin down processes, it just seems to be a lot more aligned with the way in which I multitask. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
I just brought up the store so that we can talk the actual specs. So it's the M1 Pro and the M1 Max is the difference. I, like you, I don't ever go in for the 16-inch laptops.
It's just too big.
Too big for me.
Yeah.
Who wants to carry one of those things in a backpack?
I did, too.
Yeah. My wife does, but she's an architect, so she needs more screen real estate. But what you're looking at, this is, and I just checked it on the about this Mac, this is an early 2015 13-inch. And as I said...
It has the ports?
It has all the ports.
Oh, yeah.
And I souped it up. So it was top of the line, the most storage you could get, the biggest processor you could get. And this is where the price thing will come in. In my memory, and I should look it up because I can find out, I believe it was $3,600.
Yeah.
So now, if I were to do the same thing, put in an M1, the highest M1 Max chip, 64 gigabytes of memory, which I don't know that I need that, but I, you know, you never know with these things. Here's where the real kicker comes in. You can get 8 terabytes of SSD storage now. Now, does anyone need that? Well, I will tell you that podcast files, they're big.
They're huge.
And so it's not like I need to carry every episode that I've ever recorded around with me, but that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, right? So if I fully spec'd it out, the price comes to $5,899. I don't know that I can justify it. And here's why I haven't pulled the trigger yet, is because I record the show upstairs here in my house every day on an iMac, right? Mm-hmm. So the reason that I'm hesitant now is I maybe use this machine 4 or 5 times a month. So really, if they had come out with an iMac this week, that's what I would have pulled the trigger on, because that would be more valuable to me to get the faster chip.
But didn't they do that over the summer?
Those are just the iMacs,
like the basics,
the Pro. 20, what is it, a 24 inch?
24.
Right.
Yeah.
I want the 28 inch. I want the fast processor. I want the SSD. I wouldn't even hesitate to put 8 terabytes of SSD into an iMac. So that's where I'm stuck right now, where it's like, if I spent $5,000 and then pulled it out and used it only 3 or 4 times a month, that seems like...
Yeah, that's no bueno.
Yeah.
You don't need it. I mean, this is what Apple is the master.
I was literally thinking about that. I mean, a number of things.
Buy stuff we don't need.
That they put out there. And I'm like, they really could sell shit. And sometimes they have.
So I did this tweet, like, showing a photo of Tim Cook standing in the overgrown grass inside Apple headquarters.
Lawnmower.
And say, hey, everybody, welcome to Cupertino. I am so thrilled to introduce the Apple lawnmower. And, of course, you know, this is a tweet making fun of Tim Cook. But I can't tell you how many people were in the mentions just being like, I would buy that.
Immediately.
Well, can you imagine the voice assistant on the Apple lawnmower?
Well, they've been so slow at getting their autonomous cars to work. Maybe they should start with, like, lawn care.
Hey, that's an idea.
You know, if you... teach a lawnmower that, to drive. You can eat for a night.
A roaming Siri that just, you know, you follows know. You around, like the Astro or whatever from Amazon.
Well, that's another thing that became apparent to me in this event, is that Amazon and Apple just on a collision course.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as Apple starts to build its services businesses out, it's going to come directly in conflict with Amazon. And it's so interesting because the two build so differently.
Yeah.
Right? You have Amazon that will throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. Hey, we have a robot for you. We have a drone that will fly around your house.
A talking
and take
fish
video
that has Alexa in it.
Exactly, talking fish with Alexa. And Apple, refine, only release when it's perfect.
Yeah.
But the product sets of the two are just coming directly into conflict. And it was so apparent when Apple started the event this week, because it started with Apple Music, then you had Siri, and then you had the HomePod, and then you had AirPods.
Yeah.
And you look at Amazon, and you're like, Amazon Music, Alexa, Apple's AirBuds, and of course the Echo.
Actually, so this is something that I think you'd be really...
Oh, look who you summoned.
Oh, boy.
Is that
Brian.
Alexa? Alexa, stop it.
Oh, you're not invited to this conversation. So I agree with you. And one, we're moving into this world of digital services everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It occurs to me that the conversation that we probably should be having right now is really about moats and about what the next 5 or 10 years looks like.
Yeah.
Because it is interesting, you know, Brian, to for you to point out what the price point is for sort of maxing out the laptop. It feels like the price has only gone up. It's weird. It's like the MacBook Pros are like Ferraris or something. And so they're not getting cheaper. They're not getting more accessible. You know, meanwhile, the Google event has Pixel phones that are like super cheap and affordable relative to the double priced iPhone 13 Pro Maxes or whatever.
Hold off on Google for a second, because there's something about the event. You said offline that you hadn't seen it. So there's something that'll tie into that. But what we're seeing with Apple now is what their strategy should have been all along, which is that the cheaper end, it has not as many ports, has the slower chips and everything. This is sort of the ecosystem that they should have built for 5 years ago, instead of, oh, by the way, the Pro machines too have less and less and less and thin and light and whatever. Go with the thin and light on the low end for the people that don't need the Pro stuff. That's fine. Like, I don't have any problem with them segmenting. And I don't necessarily, listen, I want to get my hands on this frickin' Apple Silicon, believe me. It's very expensive. And essentially, I would max it out just to like future-proof myself again, in case they go crazy again or something,
But I think what I'm saying, though, and this is my point to Alex, is to look at like the pricing as somewhat indicative of the strategy, right? So as I said a long time ago, Apple is a jewelry company that happens to build products that essentially connect to the internet. And whether that's, the AirPods or whatever, the price of their products has only seemed to go up, even as they are now building their own silicon, which you would have thought would have allowed them to lower the price. So what that means is that their margins are getting better, and they're also branching off into the services space. And so, Google is almost like squeezed, between these different things of wanting to make aspirational hardware, saying this is great stuff and we've got these amazing computational cameras, et cetera. But Google still makes all their money from advertising. And yet, at the same time, and I don't know if you reported on this, but, Apple now is benefiting from all the privacy changes that it has built into its operating system in terms of its own advertising initiatives and efforts. And Amazon, too, is one of the biggest advertising companies behind Google.
It's number three now, right? Isn't Amazon at this point number three in digital advertising?
So, I feel like the problem with our conversation is that we approach this as consumers of these products, which makes us a little bit blinded and too close to like the ass of the elephant to really see how big the thing is and like what comprises it. And Alex, I know you've worked in advertising before too, and so I would want to be evaluating both these events that we've seen and just the series of announcements and product directions from like that ad perspective, because Apple made a number of changes to the way in which Facebook could track. So Facebook is on the verge of renaming itself and moving into a completely different, untested digital environment, i.e. the metaverse, possibly to make up for its loss of revenues and tracking abilities on the web and on mobile devices. So if that's true, like, how I just advertising is where so much of the money and the revenue comes from. I don't think that we can evaluate these products purely from, oh, I pay this amount of money and I get this product out, and that's the nature of the relationship. The relationship is such that we will subsidize the hardware with the data that we're able to collect to then track and monetize your behavior for other purposes. And that explains some of the healthcare stuff and those bets that are also underway.
No doubt. And Apple is getting the best of all worlds, right? Because they're able to charge a premium for the laptop.
Right.
And now they're edging competitors like Facebook out of the way mm-hmm. and selling their own ads.
Yep.
You know, all in the name of privacy, yes. My dear Lord. and so it is interesting how they're now, like I mentioned, they're going to start to come up against companies. I mean, they were already a direct competitor with Facebook. I mean, anyone who says they're not is wrong. Mm. They're obviously a competitor with Google on many fronts, and a competitor with Amazon. And so what I think we've actually seen is we've gone through this period of upgrade and improvement. Like, we talk about the Apple laptops. I mean, what's really changed? Like, they're now going backwards. Like, Brian, you mentioned that there was, the mantra of Apple design was make it thinner, make it smaller. That's all they were building.
Well, Johnny Ive is gone now.
Johnny Ive is gone, but that was under Ive. And it was very interesting to me how they would talk. In my book, Always Day One, I talk about how they became a culture of refinement. Brian, I'm sure you remember this. Mm-hmm. And their vision of courage was eliminating stuff as opposed to adding it, right?
Well, like the
famously said, the headphone jack. Yeah. Why did we do this? It took courage.
Right.
Courage. So, you know, it's very interesting how now they've sort of maxed out, their inventive potential. Like Walt Mossberg was on Kara's podcast recently, and he talked about how Tim Cook's done a great job maximizing the assets of Apple, but he hasn't had a game-changing breakthrough product. And so we're sort of seeing this end stage. It's like the end stage where now you get to fight the bosses, right? Hmm. And so Apple has kind of run out of stuff to do with the Mac. I mean, kudos to them. They built a great chip. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves it, and it's about to come into MacBooks. That's awesome. But what more can you do? They've refined to the Macs. And when you do that, then you start to see the really interesting conflicts. Where do you look for growth? You look to take Facebook's business for growth. You look to take Google's business for
growth. It's a zero-sum game.
And you look to take mm-hmm. Amazon's business.
You can only grow from taking from somebody
Absolutely.
Else.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it really is going to get so fun to watch, because what we're seeing now is, look at the valuations. You know, $1.5, sometimes $2 trillion companies who need to prove to shareholders, even in this wacky environment, that they're worth the money. And when that happens, that's when you start to see some of the stuff that we're watching go down. You see laptops that cost $5,000. You see services business that try to cannibalize competitors. And you just see the gloves come off between the tech giants and its big tech Royal Rumble. Just the way we like it.
When you go through airport security, there's one line where the TSA agent checks your ID and another line where a machine scans your bag. The same thing happens in enterprise security, but instead of passengers and luggage, it's end users and their devices. These days, most companies are pretty good at the first part of the equation, where they check user identity. But user devices can roll right through authentication without getting inspected at all. In fact, 47% of companies allow unmanaged, untrusted devices to access their data. That means an employee can log in from a laptop that has its firewall turned off and hasn't been updated in 6 months. Or worse, that laptop might belong to a bad actor using employee credentials. Collide finally solves the device trust problem. Collide ensures that no device can log into your Okta-protected apps unless it passes your security checks. Plus, you can use Collide on devices without MDM, like your Linux fleet, contractor devices, and every BYOD phone and laptop in your company. Visit collide.com/ride to watch a demo and see how it all works. That's KOLIDE.com/ride, collide.com/ride.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Yeah, no, and this is why I said you're perfect for today. If we haven't underlined it, Alex wrote a book called Always Day One about these big companies and the not just the culture, but the strategy that mm-hmm. they've all employed to this point. Your newsletter, Big Technology, you cover this stuff every single week.
Every Thursday. Yeah, you get on Substack, Big Technology.
So let me unify this.
Plus the podcast.
Big Technology podcast. Thank you for the shout-outs. I do appreciate it. If anyone's willing to try it out, I am forever grateful. Thank you.
Okay, look at what a professional host I am. I'm gonna hit all of these birds with one stone. I'm gonna unify what you're saying.
Yeah.
I'm gonna make sure we talk about Google so that mm-hmm. the Google people aren't mad at us, right?
Yeah.
You had said to us offline that you didn't see the Google event yesterday. One of the things that they announced, first of all, okay, those phones look awesome. If I were in the Android ecosystem, there's no other phone that I would get. I even like the weird Jordy LaForge bar across the back. That's fine. It's super interesting that they're coming in at the low end. Like, these are, you know, even the higher end one is a $800 phone. We can get into that if you want. But they also announced yesterday what they call their Pixel Pass bundle, which is for $45 a month. Not only do you get, you're paying for the phone, which you can upgrade every 2 years, but you get everything with it. You get their music service, you get their video service, you get their, so this is sort of like the Amazon Prime monthly subscription, but for everything in the Google ecosystem. So this is what we're saying. This is taking a page out of Amazon. This is taking a page out of Apple for going for this services money. We're already talking about how people are fighting over ads, and all of these companies are essentially the same company now, or are sort of trending in that direction, in the sense that they're all doing the same things, but they're also strategically going after the same things.
Right. Yes, it's Clash of the Tech Titans. Man, do I love it. It's good. It's so interesting. First of all, it's interesting as a person who uses these products for us, mm-hmm. You know, folks who are consuming, like we end up, you know, getting more choice. This is good. It's funny. We talk a lot about, you know, monopoly and anti-competitiveness. It's certainly true that, you know, that the tech giants are doing whatever they can to ice out the smaller guys. But when it comes to the big guys, hell yeah, there's plenty of competition. And then it's just like the most magnificent business story to watch. I mean, when in our history have we had, $5 trillion companies just trying to gut each other?
It really feels like the Godzilla movies or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And even, like, enormous, by the way, titans.
Yeah.
The kaijus going after
each other. And then you have Microsoft, which is sure. the guy that runs into the tag team match with the steel chair and starts bashing everybody over the head just for the heck of it. And, you know, everyone's like, Microsoft, you're cool, don't worry about it. And then they're like, deal's off, Google, we're coming for you.
Totally.
And, I mean, yeah, it's a blast. It's a blast. And, I don't know. I do think that, you know, I had a friend who responded to me after I wrote this story in Big Technology about how Apple's, you know, anti-tracking moves were crushing Facebook's, mm-hmm. just killing Facebook's mm-hmm. performance mm-hmm. advertising. Yeah. And he wrote like something at like, you know, capitalism at full blast, let them gut it out. And honestly, why not?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So this is how a market works. And it's freaking fun to watch when you do it with a little bit of distance.
Well, let's segue into Facebook then. As we said, this is Wednesday, so...
Hold on. By the time you publish this, it might be called something else. Yeah, right.
I was going to say, we might get scooped on this particular story. Yeah.
Yeah.
good one, Chris. So today is the day that I did on the show that Facebook is considering changing its name. Mm-hmm. I think that we've probably heard today that this is not thinking. This is coming, right?
Seems likely. I mean, it would be a shock if it didn't happen.
Yeah.
They you know, Facebook PR loves using Twitter to refute bad reports.
The hell was that?
And they haven't done any tweets saying, actually, we're still Facebook. So they're not.
Chris, you made an interesting point earlier today, because I joked on the show today that maybe when Facebook went down because of the provisioning thing.
Yeah, the DNS change.
But that really could have been.
I think that was actually like a test. Like, I mean, you know, whether if it's going to be horizon.com or it's going to be metaverse.com or something, that might have been it to see if, one, what happens, you know, yeah. when they make the changeover and what breaks. And so this was actually sort of like a sort of poking test when you like decide if something is vulnerable.
Stress test.
Yes, ish. It's
you're probing the perimeter.
A probe test, yeah, yeah exactly. Yeah. Right. So regardless.
I don't know these tests. Sorry, go ahead.
It's a thing. It's anyways. Yeah. And so if that was the dry run for what's going to be launched at the F8, it's not F8 anymore, the Facebook Connect Reality Labs Day, yeah, whatever it is. Anyways, whatever their developer event is. Like, there is too much to look at that says exactly what's about to happen. And I feel like, mm-hmm. So I'm just going to lay it out like in the way that I've seen it. We've talked about this. I went and I watched, actually, on the plane out to the East Coast, I watched Facebook's developer event from the spring. I think it was June, perhaps. And there were moments where Zuckerberg was talking about the metaverse. And then there's another case where he was launching the portal, whatever the portable device was, and he was so bored, and he was like reading it from a teleprompter, and it was like, if I was on that team, I would be so pissed off. But regardless, by the end, finally, he's no longer talking about this like silly hardware device. Now he's actually talking about the metaverse, and he lights up. He's so excited. This is a person who decided during the pandemic that he was going to rename the company. And he's been sitting on this news since then. He got rid of Shrep, who was his VP of engineering, and he promoted Boz, who is the head of Reality Labs, to be VP of engineering or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I just noticed today, I think his name is Vishal, the guy that used to be head of product at Instagram is now head of metaverse at Facebook. So the guy who was in charge of building out the Instagram business along with Masseri now is running the metaverse product. Like, that tells you where the prioritization lies, because you have to assume that the effort that they were making for Reels to compete with TikTok is not working. And so they need a greenfield. And so the metaverse is that greenfield. And so that is the master stroke where Zuckerberg is the only person with 51% ownership of the company that can say, Facebook is dead, the production of Mark Zuckerberg is dead, and now it is something new. Well, and we are changing the entire gameplay that we're in.
I see that. Another thing that's been suggested to me by people who have been in the company's orbit is that, actually, your explanation ties in very, very nicely.
And I know nothing just by what I've seen publicly.
So what's been suggested to me is that, you know, first of all, I think the metaverse already exists. It exists in places like Fortnite before you're in Battle Royale mode. It exists in Roblox.
Yes, totally.
Right, when you're in this creator mode.
100%.
So I think Zuckerberg sees where this is going. What's been suggested to me is that this is a new big vision sort of push inside the company that is part, product push, but also, you know, as important or maybe more important, a employee retention and attracting, and recruitment type of thing, where it's like, you know, do you want to be at Facebook? Like, I don't know about that. Do you want to be at, Metaverse, Horizon? Right. Uh-huh. You can work on the next, you know, big frontier of technology, solve big problems. Okay, I'll take the phone call. Okay, I'll stay for another few years and see where this goes. So, and I think that ties in with the name change as well, where if this is all about, you know, oftentimes we see the messaging from these companies, and a lot of it is geared towards, you know, current and prospective employees. And I think that might be what's happening here.
But like,
and I do think
you're literally, who's the Bloomberg columnist that everybody reads about money?
Matt Levine.
His take on it today was just that. It's like, if you go visit friends or whatever, who do you work for? Facebook? Maybe you don't say that, but you would say, I work for Meta or whatever it's going to be.
I'm no longer working with Ron Artest. I'm working with Metaverse World Peace.
Also, I would point out that when you said Greenfield, like, this is one of the few areas where their reputation doesn't necessarily precede them in a negative way. Like that portal behind me, which is a great device. I love it, but most people wouldn't put it in their homes. Alex, this is specifically what I wanted to ask you, and I got to do a bit of a wind up here because I've said this many times on the show, I got wound up by people several years ago telling me that of the big five, it was Google that was in the most trouble because they were running into walls that there was only so much blood you could squeeze from the stone. There were only so many ads that you could put in.
Turns out they had two stones.
YouTube. Listen, well, first of all, YouTube is obviously helping them, as I said.
There's a lot of blood in that stone.
But also, since these people tell me that, they've had their best earnings in a decade, you know, and growth, not just dollar figures. I'm saying return to growth again. So I'm burned by this, but I'm also hearing from people that one of the things, maybe this is Facebook is in trouble. And I said on the show today, changing your name, is that something that a confident, really firing on all cylinders company does? Or is this a company that is trying to spin its wheels? That's when you change your name. But also, when people are saying Facebook's in trouble, because again, if there's one thing we know about Zuckerberg, is that he knows the data before anybody else. He does nothing but look at the data, and he has the data on all of us and everything that happens on these platforms. Facebook probably would have been in trouble 5 or 8 years ago, but Instagram has papered over a lot of sins. And so we've also recently seen, oh, they're going after teens because they need this growth pipeline coming in. So when I start to have people tell me, well, this is happening because they're seeing the writing on the wall. It might not be next quarter. It might not be next year. But they're seeing that they're going to hit a wall in terms of their earnings and their growth and things like that. What have you heard? Have I been sold a bill of goods again?
No.
Or, okay.
No, you're spot on here. So first of all, I don't think their earnings are going to hit a wall. You know, don't bet against Facebook's advertising prowess, although they are running into some trouble now, which I'll get to in a second. But look, I've always viewed Facebook as the most vulnerable of all tech giants. If you look at Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, and Google, all of them have operating systems. They are something that you use to get into the internet, which gives them a heck of a lot of control over, you know, whether their products will survive. And that's what some of this antitrust stuff is getting at, like self-preferencing. Like, you know, but like take Chrome, for instance, right? If you have the browser or Android, if you have the mobile operating system, people use that as the window into the internet. So you can put search right there front and center. And you'll ensure that even if people stop typing in www.google.com, you're going to survive. Facebook is a totally different beast. It's at the mercy of Apple. We've seen Apple shut down their apps in the past. Mm-hmm. It's at the mercy of Google. Both of those companies are working to constrain its ability to track on the web, right? This is a serious issue for Facebook's business, because everybody that you speak with, you know, on the performance advertising side, the people who put those ads on Facebook where it gets a large chunk of its money, which want you to buy right away, They told me that they're running blind. I mean, they are unable to track performance because so many people have opted out of Apple's ad tracking that they now can't see whether their ads are performing well on Facebook. And so what that's lead them to do, and even if Facebook can figure this out with some sort of, you know, advanced modeling, which I'm sure it will be able to get somewhere close once it has enough data, but what this has led people to do is try TikTok, try Snapchat, you know, try Google, maybe try a newsletter.
And that's almost the worst case scenario.
Absolutely.
Because then once the advertiser gets a taste for this, even if they do come back, they're also like, well, we're not going to pull back from TikTok because we figured out how to make TikTok work for
us. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And ad professionals are smart, you know, despite all the flack they get. They're very smart people. And you know, they know how to work these systems and learn these systems and optimize them. You know, that's how they're able to eat. And so, you know, if Facebook pulls back a little bit and now all of a sudden some of these systems are on par, and as you mentioned, they put the effort into it, you know, they're not going to end up taking, you know, they were over-indexed on Facebook. So they're not going to end up taking 100% of their spend or 90% of their spend and put it back on Facebook. They'll go with what works, and they'll ensure that they have a little bit of protection if there's going to be other changes. And so, you know, to bring it full circle, this is a major, major issue when you think about, like, which of the tech giants are the most vulnerable. Again, it's Facebook not having its own operating system. It being beholden to Apple and Google, their kneecapping company, and it does face, I'm not going to use the word headwinds, I'm not going to do it, a challenge when it comes to, you know, maintaining the level of growth that it's had in the past.
Two more observations, and then Chris, please jump in, but I'm not the only person that has said that, who's been investing a hell of a lot? Well, all VCs are investing in metaverse things right now because it's the latest buzzword. But there's a certain VC that also sits on Facebook's board. So if Marc Andreessen has been aware for a year that Facebook is going to go in this direction, you know, there is going to need to be an ecosystem that'll grow up around whatever Facebook is going to do. So there's a little bit of, you know,
intrigue there. Well, that's all, you know, it's also like, Do we think that Facebook is capable of a paradigm-changing technology experience that everybody uses right now? I don't know.
I would say no, but
yeah.
I know a lot of people that would say never bet against Zuck.
I think Zuck will be the king of social networking, but the building out into other things, it's yet to be proven.
And hasn't been proven at all. Right, hasn't been proven at all. Except
that's what I say. They should. You know, they've done a good job. They've done a good job copying Snapchat. So,
right.
You know, maybe they should just change their name to Snapchat.
Well,
you know,
that was Snapchat one of the jokes.
Is now, you know, Snap Inc.
Right.
So maybe Snapchat is available. Right. It's like, do you guys know that South Park episode where, like, the Redskins lost the trademark to the term, you know, the Washington Redskins? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That actually happened. So the South Park kids decided that they were going to call themselves the Washington Redskins, and then the actual football team called them and were angry that they took their traditional name and were disrespecting it. And it was very meta and beautiful.
Cultural appropriation is
very meta.
Go ahead, Chris. Your bet is meta, right? Or Horizon.
Naming aside, I on the one hand, I half worry about being too bullish on Facebook, but I also think that we tend to evaluate what's happening based on what's familiar and known, as opposed to, again, like if Facebook feels cornered by Apple, Amazon, Google in terms of advertising, and Apple is, you know, literally like throwing axes at, you know, Facebook in terms of its ability to track users. Google has its own hardware devices and products that allow us to do all sorts of different tracking. Amazon obviously has all of your shopping data and has basically, like, you know, in the competition for the next gen QVC between Instagram, Amazon, and TikTok, I would probably bet on Amazon in that case. So Facebook does, to your point, like, they don't have an operating system. They don't have an operating context in which they control everything. And so that suggests that they need to build that out. They need to establish what that is. And
yeah,
I would also point out, if you haven't, I've listened to a few of Boz's podcast episodes, which one does not do unless they are recruiting or essentially establishing a beachhead of content to bring people in, whether they're advertisers, whether they're movie studios, whether they're media production agencies, to essentially establish a new set of concepts and verbs and actions and activities that the next generation of social media will comprise. So if we're evaluating this based purely on web page, like two-dimensional web pages, mobile apps, and, you know, conventional news feeds, you're looking at the wrong thing. If Facebook is in decline, they're not going to, like, go down quietly, and Zuck is in the model of Bill Gates as a competitor. So he is going to find or invent a new operating context and environment and then bet the company and essentially get everyone to move in that direction. So the reason why I bring this up is because you asked the question, is or do you believe that Facebook would be able to generate or create a new, you know, context or paradigm for computing? And it seems to me that the way in which at least Boz is talking about this stuff from a UX perspective, from a trying to bring stakeholders together to create or to prevent a lot of the criticisms that have happened on the conventional two-dimensional social web, they're getting ahead of those things. Mm. And they're trying to create a place where people can go to work on this stuff.
When you said, he buys things, I was going to make the point, I think that he's a real survivor. You put Zuckerberg into survival mode.
And let me also say, like,
he'll find a way.
The game plan or the practice of successfully copying Snap's innovation in stories and doing a pretty good job with Instagram, I would say that it succeeded. And in terms of what Snap has been doing with the metaverse and creating AR lenses and things of that nature, Snap is pretty far ahead. Mm-hmm. Apple has a lot of its own stuff related to augmented reality and the metaverse. But Apple has never been able to figure out social. Apple is so behind in social. If you look in, and I just saw this the other day, in Safari on iOS 15, you sent me a few links. And when you open up a new tab page in Safari, I will see the links from you. Now, I don't know, I forget what this feature is called. But Apple also has SharePlay. Apple's social networking ambitions are so subtle as to be almost non-existent and not interesting, whereas Facebook is very overt and very clear. Facebook is obviously about interactions and relationships between people. And building a social network, as Google has experienced, is very hard and doesn't always work. The fact that Facebook has that advantage over a Roblox and over, what's the other one? It's Fortnite.
Yep.
suggest that they're doing the same thing that they did to Snapchat, but for the metaverse companies. They're learning from them, they're observing them, they're building for them. And all the developers that are building for Apple mm-hmm. or for Google are not getting a head start, and that's what Facebook has to its advantage.
Yeah, but sometimes this hits and sometimes it doesn't.
I would look at the kids.
Okay,
like, but young people growing up not spending time in feeds.
No, I understand. I'm just saying that some, for Facebook, when mm-hmm. it does these, makes these big initiatives, it hits sometimes and it doesn't others. And it could have all the vision and the best design products. It sometimes just doesn't take off.
Yep.
Look at Facebook dating. Everyone thought Facebook dating should crush it.
Kill Match,
nobody uses Facebook dating. Tinder and Matcher and Hinge are having a field day. They're just killing their earnings. And then Messenger, we forget, but Messenger and WhatsApp were supposed to be the new operating systems and their whole bot thing.
I don't forget.
And yeah, and so that stuff hasn't worked out the way that they hoped. So I don't think that they're incapable of doing it, and I agree with you that Zuckerberg is a survivor, and social media is the toughest thing to build for. It's so hard to keep people engaged. And that's probably why we see some of the bad stuff, because they're willing to make some sacrifices to do it. Mm. But, you know, that being said, this whole metaverse thing, like it's a real open question to me if it's going to be able, you know, if they'll be able to snap their fingers and all of a sudden have an operating system because it sounds like Messenger, that didn't work out. It sounds like the way they talked about VR, and VR is still niche. So can you create a game-changing paradigm with something like the metaverse, whatever that might be, from scratch if you're Facebook? I don't know. I think the odds are the odds. You know, I won't bet against Zuckerberg, but I don't think the odds are in his favor.
So a question, though, for you, like, to ground this, I think, would be, what do you think media and social media and device usage looks like in 5 years?
Wow. I think that...
More similar today or different?
I think that if you look at, you take the signals from Facebook, it's going to look more like TikTok does, where it's less of a follow model and more of an algorithm just tracking everything you do and, you know, learning because, you know, in its all-encompassing wisdom, what you're interested in and serving it up to you.
That sounds like that's sort of social media as it exists today, growing up alongside whatever the metaverse thing might be.
Well, you know, I think the metaverse is going to exist in a fragmented way, in these games like Fortnite and Roblox.
See, one of the advantages
are we going to hang out in like Facebook Metaverse, or are we going to still like
Zuckerberg,
you know, send texts and stuff like that and see each other in person?
Like, just that idea, send texts, I don't mean it in like a, I don't know, like combative way, but it's language teaches us a bit about what we expect and what we know versus things that are unfamiliar and unknown. Mm-hmm. And if I were, you know, to think about myself being a 16-year-old kid today and thinking about how I spend my time, it looks a lot more like Roblox and a lot more like Fortnite. And when I expect to go hang out with my friends who disperse to different colleges or wherever it is that they go, or they, you know, learn from home, it's going to be a lot more like a metaversian experience than Zoom. It just, and the fact that the hardware that Apple is building, I mean, these things all work in conjunction in terms of building off of each other.
Right.
All of those hardware specs are designed to power more augmented reality, more video consumption, like things that are higher bandwidth, like demanding. Like 5G still isn't even, like, isn't really here yet. People aren't building apps for that yet because it's not widely distributed. Mm-hmm. So it just seems to me that all the messaging, now I agree with you, just because you put it out there in the press release or in the developer event, it doesn't mean it happens. But if the metaverse is Facebook's North Star and they're willing to spend the next 15 to 20 years building that, the question is, will they be the dominant platform like Apple is today then?
A whole bunch of points. Number one, the advantage right now is that metaverse is just a term. We, even us three sitting right here, like, we don't know it. And people like Steven Sinofsky, or maybe it was Benedict Evans, has made the point that this is all sounding a lot like information superhighway, where everyone kind of knows. They're feeling around in the dark because they know, they have an idea of what they want, but the actual structure of it, no one really has. But the other point I wanted to make was, I believe Zuck does believe that within 5 or 10 years, us three could record these episodes with our VR headsets on, because once you get the avatars good enough, that it.
You can already create your avatar in Instagram.
Right.
It's already built in.
But weren't we excited to come here? Aren't we doing this because the three of us can be in person? And we've been doing these things on Spaces in the past. We've been talking virtually. We've done the Zooms. You know, and there is. And maybe I'm old school about it, but there's something cool.
We've talked about this.
About
I remember
being
you. This was one
person.
Of your answers. Look, we are. I don't know what utility or usage there is to sort of identify our generationalness, but I agree with you that it is great to come together in person, especially sort of semi-post-pandemic. At the same time, I've got a foot in like, you know, the NFT land and crypto world, and all of the people that interact there and transact business to the tunes of tens of thousands of dollars a day, they all have pseudonymous avatars, and they are operating in a world where real identity and coming together in the meat space is the second order to the primary order, which is their digital life. And I'm not saying this is better or worse. I'm just observing it.
But when you're money laundering, it really doesn't make a lot of sense to show your face.
Listen, I saw a pitch.
Agreed.
And I don't think I'm going to invest in it, but it was a pitch for a VR dating app. And I didn't think, like I said, I don't think I'm going to invest. I'm not going to say too much more about it. But it did make me realize that
people have sex in the metaverse.
If you get avatars right, a dating app in VR is insanely.
Let me be clear. There are a lot
idea.
Of people whose best partners are perfectly, you know, avatar. There are cultures that grow up around this stuff. Like, it's not that unusual. And the degree to which the internet.
But I'm even saying, like, imagine if you could integrate sexting so that, like, if you swipe left and you see a picture of somebody, and then that picture you say I want to talk, and that picture comes alive and uses
that with
machine learning to make.
We have the deepfakes, and
they're standing
they're
in
very
front
popular
of you.
And you can have sex with any celebrity that you
and
want,
and the clothes
with
come
all
off
the appendages that you want.
Alex does not like this feature.
Alex is double fisting, face palming.
Okay,
no,
listen.
It does. It just keeps. It sounds more and more like a Black Mirror episode. The more
I think
that
this
we
was
progress,
a Black Mirror episode actually.
I think it is. So.
How do you make a password that's strong enough so no one will guess it, and it's impossible for you to forget, and do it for 100 different sites, and make it so everyone in your company can do the same without ever needing to reset them? Sounds impossible unless you have 1Password. More than any other product I've ever told you about, I can vouch 1,000% for 1Password. I can't live without it. 1Password makes strong security easy for your people and gives you the visibility you need to take action when you need to. Any device, anytime, 1Password lets you securely switch between iPhone, Android, Mac, and PC with convenient features like autofill for quick sign-ins. All you have to remember is the one strong account password that protects everything else. Your logins, your credit cards, secure notes, or the office Wi-Fi password. 1Password's award-winning password manager is trusted by millions of users and over 100,000 businesses from IBM to Slack. It beat out 40 other options to become Wirecutter's top pick for password managers. Right now, my listeners get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/ride for your growing business. That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/ride. Don't let security slow your business down. Go to 1Password.com/ride. I'm going to a big AI startup demo day here in the city tomorrow, and I will 100% be decked out in Mack Weldon clothing. Why? Well, Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. That's their AirKnit underwear. Crazy, comfortable, but elevated sweatpants, the Ace Collection. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads, the Silver Peak Polo. That's my personal fave. And ultra-soft antimicrobial tees for when you need to stay fresh longer. Their silver crewneck t-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code RIDE. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code RIDE.
One more point that I want to make here, because I want to come back to this because I think it's super important. When you said that that they need to do this for recruiting and to keep an energy around.
So the talent piece is something, we should talk about.
It's you guys remember, like, as late as, like, 2010, one of the reasons that people thought it was insane, the Facebook's valuation and things like that, was because they're like, well, listen, social networks are fads. Another social network is going to come along
They're faddish, turns out.
Fads. But, so maybe it's just, that was true. It just got delayed by a decade. That in this sense, they do need to invent what's next. They do need to keep jumping to the next lily pad because they are in a business of
let me suggest like a reframing of that question at that point, because I think this is a very useful way to understand where we've arrived to with technology. And I was thinking about this the other day, and it kind of on the one hand made me sad, and on the other hand kind of like revealed to me what we're engaged in, which is that if you look at sports and sports announcers, and like, you know what it was? I was in an Uber and the guy had the radio on and there was some person talking about, I don't know, the sports ball, Patriots, or I think the Red Sox are in the World Series. Is that true? It may or may not be true. Check the internet.
We're a round away from the World Series yet, but they're...
Playoffs, finals? You know It doesn't really matter because I feel
the
like
the AL Championship Series.
Someone who's really into sports ball talking about tech and like not really knowing the words. Point being is that we've kind of gotten to the commentator part where, as you pointed out, the Titans are in a battle and they will stay in a battle indefinitely unless the government steps in and maybe, you know, throws on some regulation or something and ultimately changes the rules of the game and the sport. But technology now in development is like sports. And so we can talk about the needs for platforms to keep users engaged. It's no different than sports needing to figure out how to keep games interesting and exciting and maybe like shortening the innings or, you know, having only like two outs or whatever to basically keep fans focused on what's going on. Because attention changes, behavior changes, time availability changes. So all this is to say that if we're evaluating these things and thinking about whether or not Facebook is going to build these things, the answer is yes. They're going to keep building new ways to keep people engaged, and it's not going to be one true thing. It's not going to be one news feed. It's going to be many things, many different types of excitement, many different types of entertainment. And that's the battle that we're actually engaged in, which is not merely about the technology anymore.
Because as we posited on the World Cup of Entrepreneurs episode, Zuck, the juice for Zuck is people playing his game.
Exactly. Whatever the
game doesn't care what the game is.
He does not.
Yeah,
or where it's played, as long as it's played on Facebook turf.
He cares what the game is, but he's willing to make some sacrifices to keep the game going.
But that's the point. Like, the sacrifices are incidental to ultimately getting people to play the game. I mean, Boz said it himself. You're going to, you know, crack some eggs, you know, when you're building the world's greatest social network, including killing people.
Yeah.
And yet we connect. That is what we do.
Oh, yeah. I know. I know that story. I was on it.
I know. So.
Hey, speaking of stories that you may or may not be on... I keep hearing that there is a trove of new leaked Facebook documents.
Yes.
A bunch of...
Maybe 33 or so, you know, reporters are working on.
Apparently a bunch of outlets all have them, and they're coming out soon.
We've got the Pentagon papers, we've got the Facebook papers.
I'm not asking you to tip anything or whatever, but this is real.
If you'd like to tip, now would be the chance.
Yeah, it's definitely real. It certainly appears that Facebook PR had a heads up that all 30-plus reporters were going
to
make fun of its new name. But what I've gathered is that this is sort of leftover stuff from the Wall Street Journal's investigation.
The B-roll.
So, you know, but it was amazing that Facebook PR was like, there are 30 plus reporters who've agreed to hold due to, you know, after a PR firm. And it's like, you do that all the time when you have product announcements. There's no problem there when you manipulate the media. But as soon as somebody else is doing it, you're all of a sudden, you know, trying to turn the public against journalists. The whole Facebook approach to this has been totally insane. I mean, I was thinking about it on the way over here.
Can you imagine any other company doing what they did?
No, this is totally bonkers. Yeah. I mean, if they would have just said every time to every question, if they would have just said, "We're doing the research so we can get better."
Sure.
Right. They would have. They could have very easily
People
turned
would have been
it.
So bored.
Oh my God! They could have turned it from this, you know, massive, glaring scandal into, you know, oh hey, they are doing the research. Actually, I think it's pretty cool that they're doing the research. Mm-hmm. Good on them.
Right.
That's a huge deal. Mm-hmm. But instead, they've now talked about how Frances Haugen has, you know, doesn't report to and never reported to anybody, and the journalists are, you know, getting it wrong, and the data, the researchers are bad, and. you know, it's really an instance of thou dost protest too much.
Right, yes.
It's like, oh, Facebook, what exactly? You know, you wouldn't be doing all this stuff unless you sort of heart of hearts believe that a lot of this criticism is legitimate. So, but again, like Zuckerberg had a good response. He's like, we're doing the research. I just like, you know,
and they've
the
invested
fact that
more than others.
They're trying to demonize, research. You know, journalists for like going through, like, you know, if it was me, and, you know, I don't work for Facebook comms for a reason, but I would have just been like, you know, if I felt the need to address it, you know, I would have just been like, you know, we're glad that these reporters are getting hold of our research. We're the only one that does it. We challenge them to get research like this from any other company and to find a company anywhere close to as serious as we are to improving.
But isn't the problem, situation. I mean, the results? I mean, what the research shows and what Facebook knew and what Facebook did or did not choose to do to address those issues with its product is the realm where it says, okay, Facebook, like, self-regulation clearly is not working because you knew these things and yet you did it anyways.
No, that I would say that, like, you know, talking purely about the communications, that's the stuff that's bonkers. This stuff that this research found is definitely, you know, glaring and revelatory.
Is it surprising?
And no, because it's important, I think, for folks to understand that there's two, so there's two sides to Facebook, right? There's the side that wants to be good for the world, and there's the side that we've been talking about through our whole conversation, which is the one that feels the need to grow and sees TikTok and YouTube nipping at its heels and taking its teenage users, which are its future. And so there's a very real tension between implementing the fixes that the research organization wants them to put in and surviving. And so I call it the Facebook survival dilemma, because it is something that, you know, Facebook is like, you know, in order to survive, are we gonna you know, fundamentally harm our service? And you know, or I don't know, like, is there a way to do this without having all these people?
But one thing that people pointed out, you know, is just that the system that Facebook operates within is the capitalist system. And if Facebook were grown in China, would things be different? You know, in terms of like two major different structures and experimental zones, like Facebook has had to have that sort of, you know, Gemini vibe of being both wanting to, you know, change the world and connect it and make things.
I don't think it's had to have that. It's been a choice.
Well, that's my question, though. Mm-hmm. The choice to grow, like, I don't think that there is a choice to not grow. To basically say, you know, we're good. We've got, you know, a billion people. Whoa. We're set.
Disagree.
Really?
Well, I mean, if
from a market perspective,
well, you know,
once you go public, I mean, how do you, you're like, all right, we're done growing?
Oh, come on. Like, Zuckerberg is the only, you know, only important voice in the room there.
You don't think that his impetus to grow comes or stems from the economic system that he, that generated him?
So I do think he wants to make more money. Yeah, but do I think...
I mean, he's got so much money.
I know, but do I think, like, does he have a choice? Of course he does. He has a choice. Of course. And it's something that he's hinted at when he said we're going to have, like, time go down on our site when we go from media consumption to, you know, what this new engagement model that ended up being flawed was, meaningful social interactions. And he said we are going to proactively choose to have people spend less time, and that will lead to a revenue hit.
But didn't that actually lead to more growth?
Well, yes.
So the question is, did he know that?
I think they had a pretty good idea what they were doing because, I mean,
so that was
in the,
he said, I think that, or I know that time is going to go down, and yet they chose to go that path.
I think
and then
he was spinning, and I think we have the truth now, thanks to these documents. And actually, I think of all the Wall Street Journal stories, the one about this algorithm change to meaningful social interactions was far and away the best.
That was
the most important one.
Because it showed what levers they have to make changes.
You know, at the end of the day, it's a simple, but it's a simple answer, though, to your question, which is that, like, of course they have a choice. Zuckerberg is the, you know, the only voice that matters in that company. And so he can do whatever he wants. We've seen it time and time again.
Because it can't be removed.
Can't be removed, can't be overridden.
Right.
The board could all quit, but he would install a new board.
Yeah.
So... he has full. It is a pretty wild thing that a company with the market cap the size of Facebook is controlled by one person, but it is. And so, you know, I know that there's been like the there's been this popular line of argument, like the one that you mentioned, that Facebook is a product of capitalism, which yes, of course it is, but it's also, you know, it's not. I wouldn't say that its future is determined by the system that it works in, because the clear truth is that the future is determined by Mark Zuckerberg, and there's no other way about it.
I was searching for the tweets because I'm sure I didn't actually mention this on the show. So let me just read the specific tweets that led to this. And this was from October 18th. Facebook Newsroom tweeted, "A curated selection out of millions of documents at Facebook can in no way be used to draw fair conclusions about us. Internally, we share work in progress and debate options. Not every suggestion stands up to the scrutiny we must apply to decisions affecting so many people." So the argument there being, hey, anybody's internal documents are going to look kind of mean and ugly and dirty.
Dirty laundry is going to look like dirty laundry.
Because we're trying to make decisions in a frank and real way. And that includes, what is the downside of this? Okay, mm-hmm. Hold on. Let me read the... Because this second one was the more interesting one to me. So then, this is signed by John Panette, VP of Communications. "To those news organizations who would like to move beyond an orchestrated gotcha campaign, we are ready to engage on the substance." Now, first of
who
all...
Who would that be?
First of all, they're not ready to engage on the substance. But second of all, is this not sort of a Streisand effect sort of thing? Like, you know more about this than either of us. Mm. Has their PR gotten really bad lately?
Yes.
Why?
I don't know.
They should be the best at this in the world because they've been doing it since day one.
They've lived in crisis land. So yeah. Here's my only explanation for it. I mean, it's terrible, but not the explanation. The PR has been real bad. But it is possible that they have. Okay, so look at the influences. You know, Peter Thiel is on that board. You know, Mark Andreessen's, you know, I've been close with Zuckerberg from the beginning.
Yeah.
A lot of the engineers, a lot of the Facebook employees have been very, you know, they're keen observers of the media. And they know that there's been a pushback in the tech world to try to discredit the media and disintermediate the media. I mean, go to our favorite website, Future. It's an Andreessen Horowitz once every year blog. You know, that's sort of the idea. And so it is possible that, you know, the audience, what they're trying to do is just be like, you know, these journalists have gotten it wrong and, you know, they're out to get us. You know, that's what the gotcha campaign is. And, you know, we're here to interact in an earnest way. And if they're not going to do it, we need to let you know that they're wrong. And that, I think, might be fodder to the disintermediate the media. You know, tech journalists are a biased pack who get things wrong en masse often. And maybe that's what they're playing toward.
Says somebody with a very popular Substack.
I mean, but to be fair,
I'm like, joking.
I want to say that I'm on a mission. I'm on a mission to give people an alternative to the corrupt corporate media. You know, I'm just kidding. I think we work in concert, not in concert, but as compliments, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to write stories that the New York Times never will. The Times will write stories that I won't. It's good to have people with different perspectives covering similar stuff because you're going to end up seeing that. You know, you'll end up seeing these different perspectives.
No, but, okay, like, this is a very important point, I think. And I think that, you know, Alex, you being here, you know, I don't know how or if to describe you as neutral, because I don't think you are. However, like, you have a perspective.
We've talked about this,
yes,
yeah.
We've talked about this. And yet, out of the Wall Street Journal stories, and the documents that really weren't shared broadly, to my knowledge, there were a whole lot of media stories that were written in a very, you know, biased adversarial way. And so, although, you know, Facebook bears scrutiny, especially being the size that it is, the way in which you can see whatever you want kind of in the tea leaves or in the Rorschach test of these documents allows people to spin and create stories that advance their own agendas, whatever those agendas may be.
Yeah.
And as a result, there is a question. Now, I'm not saying that Facebook is doing things right, but I'm saying that the challenge of being inside of the sausage factory and making the sausage itself makes it very difficult to know how to explain yourself in a way that is relatable, understandable, comprehensive, such that an audience that is looking for their own gotcha moments are able to stick around long enough. I mean, like, you know, you've been trying to push the angle of clear-headed, nuanced, like, conversations for a long time.
Yeah.
Right? And
they're tough.
It's tough. It's tough to get an audience. It's tough to, like, get people engaged. It's tough people to have them stick around for as long as that goes. So I think my question, you know, in a sense, isn't necessarily to push back on what you're saying, but if you take, and maybe they, again, don't warrant this type of credulity.
I think so.
Of this Facebook comms person, if you take him at his word, there is a question as to how this conversation should play out.
Yeah.
In a way where there's some sort of container that is created for the conversation, and there can be a, if not raucous debate, a useful debate.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, I feel like we're just yelling at each other. And what Facebook is doing is it's going to its corner, it's going to launch Horizon, and all these things are going to be harder to talk about because the media now suddenly has to talk about it as though it's Horizon and not Facebook, and they'll talk about it as Horizon, formerly known as Facebook, and then people are going to be like, wait, what is Horizon? And then it'll be like this big squirrel moment, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, I mean, we also do that with Alphabet. No one calls it Alphabet anymore. Right. Everyone calls it Google.
Yeah, Alphabet was that's sort of a failed rebrand.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think that they're all that interested in the conversation that John Panetta offers in that tweet.
They being the media?
Facebook.
Facebook's
let's talk about the media, first of all.
Yeah.
I think the point that you made is good. I think that I just listened to this podcast. I forgot which one it was, but it was a sports reporter who talked about how, most sports reporters are, just kind of cheating off the New York Times and Wall Street Journal.
Right. Exactly.
Or they look to those publications for signals because, they're not smart enough to, make their own determinations about what's important
doing
in society.
All the work right. Mm-hmm.
And so, I think a lot of this stuff becomes pack driven when your editor is all right, get me something in 2 hours. And, you just write what the Wall Street Journal said with less nuance.
Right.
And repeat it without hearing anything else. Mm-hmm. Maybe, there are people who might not bother to make a call to Facebook or call their own sources probably because they have none. And, and then end up repackaging something in a more scandalous way that gets clicks. It's a problem, but honestly, for us to focus on that versus the actual issues with Facebook is kind of what Facebook wants. But again, the media, you guys know me, I've always been clear that I do believe the media needs to be introspective. We try to do it on my show all the time. And it's something that the media can be better at. One of the things I've realized, in my career as a reporter is that when people don't want to try to solve hard problems, they end up just blaming the media and not actually getting to the core of the issues. So, and as far as Panetta's offer, I've had for a few weeks now a request to get Nick Clegg on my show and transcribe it with, some publications that would get it some range. And, I'm not interested in gotcha stuff, that's for sure. I want to hear him out. I have some tough questions for him. But the offer is still in their court. So, if Facebook is serious about this stuff, they should instead of writing long Twitter threads, demonizing the practice of embargoes, which they engage in every day, should end up leading by action and not by words. And honestly, leading by action has been the trouble with Facebook. And it's not we talk about their comm strategy, which come on, we could talk about that forever. It's a hilarious joke, but at the end of the day, Jeff Van Gundy, who's a former coach of the Knicks, you went sports, so I'll go sports to wrap this segment. He was on, he was watching, he's now a commentator and was calling a playoff game a few years back. And there was this long discussion about whether player X was dirty, because he would always get hard fouls and stuff like that. And Van Gundy was like, look, you are what you do. You are what you do. It's simple, but it's really true. And, this can all be settled. This discussion can be settled with action, and not by Facebook spinning it one way or reporters doing something the other way. And that's what it boils down to, in my opinion.
Nick Clegg, it's Big Technology is the podcast.
Oh, I think he's aware.
I know, but so. That was my way of reminding those listening.
Big Technology podcast.
Is the podcast.
We did do a show with Jeff Horowitz, who wrote the series, and Brian Boland, who was a longtime Facebook executive there for 13 years.
Yeah.
And we just went over the stories and talked about both Jeff's reporting and then what it was like for Brian internally as he encountered this stuff. So this is sort of the ideal type of show that we try to do on the podcast, where it's not just invective, but it's actually let's talk to the people who've done it. Let's talk to the people writing about it and see where we net out at the end of an hour.
To wrap it up today, Chris, here's my argument for why the new Facebook name can't be Horizon.
Okay, great. It just sounds too much
like Horizon. That's it.
That's what I said. Now, I tweeted that.
Right. But the... Okay, then great minds think alike. Then, now, however, again, we remember that Zuck is the final arbiter. And if he doesn't give a shit, it's going to be Horizon.
He can buy Verizon and buy AOL and revisit that, you know?
Yeah. Trunk was a name that people suggested.
That was on the BuzzFeed quiz. Yeah. Trunk.
Yeah. And Smoked Brisket, I think, was another good one.
I did love... Ina Fried had a great tweet saying that Facebook, you know, we're glad you want to change your name. Please fax us a court order and your new ID. And
we'll right.
Just booking at Facebook's real name policy.
Right.
Anyone who's tried to change a name and everyone gets who does that tries to get ends up getting kicked off. So, that was nice. It was all right, a little bit of your own medicine.
Chris, enjoy the rest of your week here in Brooklyn.
Thank you.
As I always say, this is the time of year to come.
Oh my God, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been great.
Thank you both for coming to my kitchen.
Yeah, thanks
for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then wrap it up, host.
Well, thanks everybody for joining for another episode of the Tech Meme Ride Home Experience. We were happy to have Alex Kantrowitz here, along with Brian and myself, of course. We typically record on Wednesdays. Our schedule is a little bit off, but who knows? Anyways, we will be here next time to talk about all the big news in the technology world, metaverse or beyond.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.